Today, inside the US immigration camps that are holding young children. In the town of Clint in Texas, lying just east of the city of El Paso and pressed right up against the border with Mexico, is a migrant detention center that has become infamous in the past few weeks.
What we saw today was unconscionable. No child should ever be separated from their parent.
Every month, tens of thousands of migrants cross the southern border into the United States, and many of the children, traveling alone or separated from their parents, end up in this facility. Initially built for about 100 adults, it now holds sometimes up to 700 children at a time. There have been reports of overcrowding, neglect, and deaths. And the lawyers who have visited say the conditions there are horrifying.
I've been visiting children detained in federal immigration custody for 12 years. I've never seen anything like this before. I have never seen, smelled, had to bear witness to such degrading and inhumane conditions.
President Trump says the Democrats are to blame, while immigration activists and lawyers say it's a public health crisis and have filed a lawsuit against the government. From The Guardian, I'm India Rackerson. Today in Focus, the children trapped in America's immigration detention centres. The Clint facility is supposed to be a short-term processing centre, but it's become a place where children are detained for weeks in unsafe and unsanitary conditions. It's difficult for journalists and politicians to get into the facilities to find out what's really going on. But a few weeks ago, a group of lawyers made an official visit. They were there to inspect the facility under a long-standing court order, the Flores Agreement, which outlines the duty of care to children and limits how long they can be held. Alora Mukherjee is a prominent immigration lawyer who's been visiting detention centres for 12 years. She and the other lawyers didn't intend to go public, but what they saw was so awful, they decided they had to speak out.
I have participated in inspections under the Flores Agreement multiple times, and I have been extremely concerned about the well-being of children in other federal immigration detention centers, but I have not before gone to the media, gone to the public with my concerns. What we saw in Clint was horrifying. It was far worse than anything I've ever seen before. It was clearly an emergency public health crisis. Over the past year, 7 children have died in federal immigration custody or shortly after being released from federal immigration custody. This is compared with no reported deaths of children in the previous decade. We were extremely concerned that more children might die if we didn't go public.
Recently, The Guardian US national correspondent Amanda Holpuck spoke with Alora at her office in Columbia University.
Well, it was really, really powerful. Alora descriptions of what she saw were heartbreaking and devastating, and you could hear that this was something that had really, really deeply upset her, and she's someone who has seen children in detention many times before.
The children were hungry, they were dirty, they were scared, they were sick. And many of them had been detained far longer than the 72-hour limit required by law. The children told us that every child at the facility was given the same amount of food, regardless of if they were 1 year old or 17 years old or a breastfeeding teenage mom with higher caloric needs. and that they were so hungry that some children, many children, were waking up at night with hunger pangs. I asked multiple kids, what would happen if you just asked the guards for more food and explained that you're hungry? And the kids explained to me that they were too scared to ask because they had seen other kids asking. And the guards had said, yelled, you've had your ration. You don't get any more. We saw children who were very dirty. Many of the children hadn't bathed for days, some for weeks. Nearly every child I spoke with was wearing the same clothing that they had crossed the border in. We met with children who had bodily fluids all over their clothes, nasal mucus staining their clothes, teenage moms with breast milk stains covering their clothes. My colleagues met with children who had vomit stains on their clothes. Some children who needed diapers weren't provided with diapers, so their pants had urine on them. And the children didn't even have soap to wash their hands with. They didn't have toothbrushes or toothpaste. And so they were dirty, and some of them, unsurprisingly, had a stench emanating from them. And when I interview children in federal immigration custody, I try to sit near them in an effort to build rapport. And I found that hard to do for some of the children because of the stench that was coming off of their bodies. We met with children who were sick. We learned of a flu epidemic and a lice infestation at the facility. I begged for access to the quarantine where the sickest children were being held, and that was denied. We were really worried about the children in the quarantine. The reason is the previous week, my colleagues and a pediatrician had been to a nearby facility in McAllen, Texas, a facility called Ursula, and my colleagues had identified 5 babies who were so sick that they needed immediate hospitalization. They were all admitted to the neonative intensive care unit immediately. And we were worried that the children in the quarantine at Clint might need similar medical attention. It's heartbreaking, it's appalling, it's horrifying to know that there were very young, sick children in the quarantine who we could not talk to. I am haunted by what I witnessed in Clint and the experiences that the children shared with me stay with me. And the children who spoke with me were so brave to do so given the conditions that they were in. Multiple children were too traumatized to speak with us. I met with a teenager who was forced to take care of a much younger child who was unrelated to her. She was too scared to put her name on a declaration about what she had been experiencing, and she was extremely fearful of harms and retaliation that she might experience if she spoke out publicly. Another little boy who I was meeting with was so traumatized that for nearly the hour that he was with me, he was sobbing inconsolably. He couldn't say his name. He hardly showed signs that he could communicate in Spanish or that he was comprehending what I was trying to say to him. And I realized that the interview just wouldn't work with him, and eventually I just let him sit on my lap for a long time, and I rubbed his back, and I tried to console him, and eventually a guard came and gave him a lollipop as an incentive to take him back to his cell.
Amanda Holpuck has reported widely on stories of immigration in the US and on the process of how children become separated from families.
So some of these children either came to the border by themselves or they were separated from their parents. Even though family separation sort of ended as a formalized policy last year.
Donald Trump today took the rare step of backing down. He undid a problem he himself created, even as he took credit for his own reversal.
So we're keeping families together, and this will solve that problem.
The U.S. government can make determinations on whether the child will be safe in the custody of the parent they've arrived with. A lot of times, these children are also arriving with aunts, uncles, grandparents, and because they're not direct relatives, it's very easy for the government to say, you know, you two have to be separated, and this child will now be facing the immigration detention system on their own.
What I just don't understand, though, how that can happen, how the US government can be deciding that the child's better off without their aunt or their grandma or...
I mean, there's extremely little oversight into the process being used to determine whether or not a parent is fit to take care of their child. There's a legitimate claim that children could be trafficked at the border, and there is a set of interview questions meant to determine whether that's happening. How these protocols are actually being followed when a child arrives with an adult at the border is extremely unclear.
And are there protocols for making sure these kids don't then get lost in the system?
What is concerning about what's happening at Clint and what's happening now that there's so many people coming over the border and the Trump administration is not showing any signs of responding dramatically to the conditions we're seeing is that we don't know how many children are in the custody of Border Patrol each day. This is something the lawyers demanded, and when they got lists, which wasn't happening every day, the lists weren't reflective of the reality that they themselves were seeing. There were names that were spelled incorrectly. There were children who weren't on the list. There is a system that is supposed to work where if you're a child arriving at the border by yourself or having been separated from a parent, you get processed and then you're sent to a children's shelter. During family separation last summer, that process was thrown into chaos. And I think the combination of having 350 children in a border processing facility where the government is not producing a public list of how many people are being kept there, combined with the lingering stresses on the system, is sort of paints a really frightening portrait of what could be happening with these children.
These children are being looked after by people who work for the Customs and Border Protection in the US. I mean, who are the people who are caring for kids in these facilities? Are they speaking up? They must be pretty concerned about the conditions.
There is not a system in place to put actual caretakers for these children. They are being watched and supervised by Border Patrol agents who have minimal to no training in child protection. One of the main things advocates are pushing for right now is requiring advocates for children to be put in these locations and requiring medical experts who are either pediatricians or have worked with children and specialize in working with children to be in these facilities regularly.
In 2014, under the Obama administration, there was a big surge in children crossing the border alone.
Since October, more than 52,000 kids have been caught crossing into this country. They came here illegally and on their own. The children are mostly from Central America. Detention centers are overwhelmed by the surge.
Largely at that point, it was because of drug-related violence. And Trump has said that Obama actually introduced a policy of child separation, but that's not what happened. What did happen under the Obama administration?
Because the United States infrastructure for processing immigrants is built for adults, what was happening then was similar to what we're seeing now. There are reports of children being held in these really, really cold conditions, not having adequate access to food, not having safe and sanitary conditions. And the Obama administration did introduce some programs, such as a program that let children in Central America apply for refugee status from their home country so they wouldn't have to face as dangerous of a journey north, and that their process when they arrived would be more efficient. That is something the Trump administration got rid of shortly after Donald Trump took office.
So what did happen when Trump became president in 2016?
After Donald Trump took office, he very quickly started trying to pick apart the asylum seeking process in the United States.
After days of beefing up his anti-immigration rhetoric, the president announced Thursday he plans to limit U.S. asylum policy.
The Trump administration views asylum as a process riddled with loopholes that allow immigrants to take advantage of the United States.
The illegal aliens will no longer get a free pass into our country by lodging meritless claims in seeking asylum.
And that's when you started hearing about children and families being pulled apart.
Images of children being separated from parents and parents being held in large locked cages are generating strong reaction.
Because adults were immediately being charged as violating a crime by crossing the border, and that crime made them ineligible to retain custody of their children.
How have the Democrats responded to his position on immigration?
With what's happening in Clint, they're very galvanized around drawing attention to what's happening. The sort of big thing that happened in American politics last week was that Congress voted in favor of spending $4.5 billion to address the humanitarian situation in detention centers.
Speaker Nancy Pelosi says the House will, quote, reluctantly pass the Senate's Border 8 bill.
Notably, it was mostly Republicans who voted for this bill because Democrats are extremely skeptical about how the government is going to spend this money and believe that instead of devoting more money, there needs to be serious alterations to the law around how people are being kept safe, setting requirements around having doctors in these facilities, setting requirements around how much space an individual should be granted, setting laws around the temperature in these facilities.
There is a sense, isn't there, that the Trump administration is deliberately making the conditions as bad as possible to say, this is what awaits you, don't come.
Yeah, I mean, Donald Trump campaigned for president on a platform that dehumanized immigrants.
They're sending people that have lots of problems. They're bringing drugs, they're bringing crime, they're rapists.
What happened once he came into office was a series of policies that continue to treat immigration as something that is bad for the United States. His policies focus on deterrence and preventing people from coming in. This is something the Trump administration has said explicitly about family separation. They've not said it explicitly about the conditions at Clint. That is how a lot of people are interpreting, though, that these things are meant to prevent people from coming in.
It's amazing when Elora talks about her visit and she says that she was told that after an initial outcry over the conditions, hundreds of kids had been moved.
The U.S. government has removed hundreds of migrant children from a border protection facility in Texas after attorneys visited the shelter last week and found they were living in squalid conditions.
Where were they being taken?
We don't know exactly what has happened to all 350 children who were in Clint, and you know, this is something the lawyers on the case are pursuing more information on. What we've been told is that some were transferred to the custody of the health department, which is what is supposed to happen. Some were said to have been moved to other Border Patrol facilities that are supposedly newer and cleaner. And after this first report about Clint came out, the government said they'd moved the children and then that they'd move them back.
After reports that nearly 250 migrant children were moved from a Border Patrol station in Texas because of unsanitary conditions, in just the last few minutes, we've learned that 100 of those kids have been moved back in.
Yeah, this comes after backlash over conditions in this Clint, Texas facility.
I think it's safe to say there's no really clear answer on where all of these children are. Additionally, there are more children coming in every day. So what's happening at Clint is something that most people think it's being replicated at other facilities and will continue.
I mean, how is the administration even justifying this?
The administration's justification for what is happening at Clint has been one of denying the reports by the lawyers, The president has repeatedly gone to Twitter to say that people should not be coming here in the first place if they don't like the conditions. And a Border Patrol official was saying that it's not their fault children aren't brushing their teeth because these children don't know how to brush their teeth and they can't force them to clean themselves.
What? Well, there have been other reports, yeah, though, that they're not even provided with toothbrushes or soap or underwear or diapers or anything.
In court, the government argued that toothbrushes, soap, and adequate sleep are not included in the definition of a safe and sanitary condition for children.
It's within everybody's common understanding that, you know, if you don't have a toothbrush, if you don't have soap, if you don't have a blanket, it's not safe and sanitary. Well, wouldn't everybody agree to that? Do you agree to that?
Well, I think there's fair reason to find that those things may be part of safe and sanitary.
Maybe are a part. What do you say, maybe? You mean there are circumstances when a person doesn't need to have a toothbrush, toothpaste, and soap for days?
It's now been nearly a month since Laura's visit. Has anything changed?
Despite the Trump administration denying the reports of these lawyers and claiming that the only solution is to stop people from coming in, there's sort of an amount of public outcry that we haven't seen since last year. I think this House hearing this week in Congress could be quite pivotal in orienting the public discussion around what can be done. I spoke to a woman who has also been to detention facilities several times over the past decade, who works in this field, who specifically works on immigrant children's rights, and she said she's rarely optimistic about anything, but the energy she was seeing in the United States made her believe this is one thing that might actually change, that people are galvanized right now to demand higher standards for how the United States treats children in its custody.
And there are plans for a vigil to take place tomorrow, July the 12th, in the US, but also around the world, including here in the UK. What's happening?
Yes, there's something called the Lights of Liberty protest scheduled. I think right now they have about 150 groups partnering with them. You know, there's a lot of energy right now, and it's possible that this will be the thing that sort of people can go to express their frustration.
Do keep up to date on the legal case, and you can read much more on this story at theguardian.com. Coming up, how our experiences when we are young impact the rest of our lives. Now, the immediate needs of the children in the Clint facility are, for many, the current focus. But others are looking ahead to what the future might hold for them. Jennifer Silvers is a professor of developmental psychology at UCLA.
Well, whenever the brain is undergoing a dramatic period of growth, it renders it more sensitive to all kinds of experiences, both good and bad. The upside of this is it means that the brain is really capable of learning new things during this time. So this is why young children are so amazingly adept at picking up a second language effortlessly, for example. But then the flip side of that is that if they're in an environment that's full of stress, trauma, they're going to be particularly sensitive to that as well. When we think about children who have encountered multiple stressors, such as the kids who are currently at Clint, most of them are fleeing violence, they're fleeing poverty, and then to be separated from their families and detained in really terrible conditions, that cumulative effect is going to be incredibly impactful. Their risk of developing mental illness goes up manyfold. Children are basically characterized by their vulnerability. And the single biggest resource that children typically have to help them weather stress is to have their parents there to take care of them. So they keep them physically safe, they keep them warm, they keep them fed. They also serve to manage their emotional needs. So they tell them that everything is going to be okay when they encounter something really scary. So one of the most compelling examples we have for what the effects of childhood trauma are on long-term development come from research that was done in Romanian orphanages several decades ago. So children who were placed in Romanian orphanages were often exposed to having many children under the care of one caregiver in dirty rooms with limited resources. And we see huge effects on mental health problems, on behavioral problems, as well as physical health problems. So when we think about the children at Clint, who we know are already at risk for developing mental and physical illness due to their backgrounds that have brought them to the U.S., we are effectively doing everything we can to ensure that they will develop mental illness. So the effects of childhood stress and trauma are really not just unique to mental health, but physical health as well. For example, children who were placed in orphanage care, we see that their cells seem to literally age faster. We can see that experiencing a high degree of stress in childhood is associated with earlier death, as well as a number of cardiac and other sort of metabolic disorders in adulthood. The really disturbing thing is that all of the people I know who work in developmental psychology and neuroscience, we all thought that we were done with talking about orphanage care, at least the level of experience that children experienced in the Romanian orphanages. We thought that this was something of the past, and we're seeing it play out again today in the United States, and that is an incredibly disturbing thing to see. I almost couldn't create a public health crisis that is worse than this if I tried.
That's all for today. My thanks to Jennifer Silvers, Amanda Holpuck, and Alora Mukherjee. Today's programme was produced by Mythili Rao and Courtney Youssef. The sound design is by Axel Kakutier, and the executive producers are Nicole Jackson and Phil Maynard. We're back with you tomorrow.